Thank you, Bob, for the wonderful comments you made about many of the achievements in John's life. I'd like to comment a little on John's style and add a few more achievements because we've only scratched the surface. John was descended from Norwegians, apparently also from Scots-Irish, but he mostly talked about the Norwegians, who lived along one of Norway's stunningly beautiful fjords. I have spent many happy months in Norway over the years and have come to love the country and its people. I'd like to share a quote from a treasured book that was given to me by Norwegian friends, The Sayings of the Vikings, about seeking wisdom. The cautious guest who comes to the table speaks sparingly, listens with his ears, learns with his eyes, such is the seeker of knowledge. All of you who knew John knew him as a man of very few words. John was laconic in the best sense of that word, concise and to the point in his remarks, as Bob has already mentioned, frequently delivered with his wonderful, wry sense of humor. Inspired by John's example, I'll try to keep my comments brief. I described John as a man of few words. In many meetings that I was in with John, his observations or comments, when eventually offered, would invariably cut right through the fog of a confused and wandering presentation to focus and redirect the conversation immediately. As a valued member of many PhD students' examining committees, John would sit at the table listening carefully to the student's presentation, concentrating intensely with his eyes half closed, but not snoozing, as the student would soon discover. After some length of time spent listening and thinking like this, John would abruptly look up, wait politely for a lull in the conversation, and then quietly interject an observation or comment. These always concise and invariably constructive comments would probe the area of greatest weakness in the student's arguments, raise difficult questions, and almost always redirect the research plan to direct these weaknesses that he had highlighted. Bob wrote a technical report on the circle and connecting line diagram that Bob referred to, his contribution to project planning techniques, which launched really the method along with his startup company for managing construction projects, planning and managing them. The technical report that he wrote was only 40 or 50 pages long, as I recall. And if it had been published by a commercial publisher, the hundreds of thousands of copies that we've distributed over the years would have made it a New York Times bestseller in the nonfiction category. John was also the kind of leader that is recently being recognized by business writers. Not the in-your-face Jack Welch, General Electric kind of leader, but the self-effacing, modest, and above all, authentic leader. And I would like to join John and Bob, in acknowledging and celebrating John's dedicated and effective leadership of our construction engineering and management program at Stanford from the time that Clark Oglesby retired around 1974 until John retired. With his trusted Lieutenant Faye Chapman fiercely guarding his door, John held sway over the CEM program from his term in 294 office for almost two decades. He did a masterful job of keeping everyone in the program focused, seeing to it that we all had the resources we need to deliver this program that has been and remains one of the leading graduate construction programs of its kind worldwide. And so my construction engineering colleagues and I are deeply appreciative of the skillful way in which John managed the people, information, time, and money during his time as our group leader to make this program run so smoothly and continue so effectively till today. As Bob says, John traveled widely, always willing to share his experience and insight with universities around the world that were planning to launch similar programs. These travels took him to all five continents, including US, Canada, Chile, Norway, Switzerland, Japan, China, Australia, South Africa, and I know I've left some out. All of these programs benefited from John's sage advice and counsel, and most are still thriving to this day. Right before the session, I ran into Fritz Gebauer, who had met Greg Howell in Colorado earlier this week. Fritz is now a professor at Karlsruhe University in Germany. He heard about this event, immediately bought the last ticket on the flight from Denver, and is sitting in the audience with us today. And so this is the kind of respect and honor that John enjoys from people he's interacted with in this way around the world. I'd like to mention another aspect of John's leadership that many of you will know about. His important contributions to the governance and management of one of the world's great companies, the Caterpillar Tractor Company. For many years, John served on the board of directors of Caterpillar, during which time Caterpillar was recognized by Forbes magazine and others as having one of the most competent and effective boards of directors of any publicly listed U.S. corporation. John shared several stories with many of us about his service on this board. Among the distinguished members of this board were Stanford alumnus and Hewlett-Packard co-founder David Packard, Raleigh Warner, the chairman of Mobile Corporation, and on and on. Lou Gerstner from IBM was another one of these board members. Since John and Dave Packard were both from the Bay Area, the two of them would often carpool to the airport to take a flight to wherever Caterpillar's board meeting happened to be that month. And apparently one time, John picked up Dave Packard in an old and well-used car. I was guessing it was the Cadillac Eldorado of considerable vintage that he had inherited from his late father. Meredith recalls a similar story involving the Fondahl family's town and country station wagon with its faded faux wood door panels, and Doris as the designated driver. But in any case, whether it was the ancient Cadillac or the beat-up station wagon, John was a little embarrassed about picking up David Packard in this old car. Until the next board meeting, when Dave Packard came to pick John up in what was apparently an even older and more beat-up car and took him over to the airport where they boarded the HP executive jet to go off to the board meeting. As we all know, John was extremely fortunate to be accompanied by an exceptional partner through his life's journey. John told my wife, Kathleen, and me at a pre-theater dinner a few months ago that he had made many decisions in his life, some good, some not quite so good. But without question, John said the best decision he'd ever made was to ask Doris to marry him. Doris, on this occasion, I'd like to extend to you all of our profound thanks for the many ways in which you have contributed to Stanford University's construction program over the years, not least for all of the welcome parties that you hosted every fall in your gracious Los Altos Hills homes for a whole generation of new Stanford construction students, many of whom, like me, are here today. John was a beloved colleague and an old school gentleman who represented the epitome of intelligence, modesty, grace, and kindness. In the waning days of his life, John retained the twinkly-eyed humor and positive outlook that had characterized his entire life and works. He truly lived in the Viking way, knowing how to look on the bright side. Quoting again from my Viking book with just a little poetic license, "Though your health is ailing, all is not lost. Your children and grandchildren can swell your pride. Your brave and devoted spouse, your valiant kinsmen, your fine vegetable garden, your work well done." All of us whose lives were fortunate to be touched by John's uncommon friendship, authentic leadership, and unconditional support join the Fondahl family today in celebrating John's long and productive life. We mourn with them his passing.